In a groundbreaking legal decision, a Montana judge earlier this month ruled in favor of young people who had accused state officials of violating their constitutional rights by promoting fossil fuels. Even before the judge's decision, the Held versus Montana case made history when it became the first ever constitutional climate case in U.S. history to go to trial. Well, Mike, there are different legal opinions on what ground has been actually broken here through this legal decision, but there are different ways of assessing the outcomes. Let's talk about the significance of the decision and then about the drama of the case. What's your take on the judge's decision and how to assess it?
Well, it was made in a very small forum, a state court in Montana, which is very few people, and it was not affirmatively demanding of anyone in Montana, but I think it was a powerfully effective decision because it was competently arranged, the whole presentation of facts. She made as a finding of facts is meticulous series of facts following climate change, essentially over the last century. And when it became of concern, how it has been measured, how it was first measured, how the changes are increasing. Now she had the advantage of a state constitution, which required that every person in Montana maintain and improve a clean and healthful environment for present and future generations.
Now, was that critical in what was admissible here? Because I followed a lot of these trials and judges ruling out climate testimony from the beginning as relevant. How critical was that?
It was very important. In fact, it was the basis of her decisions. And on the one hand, it's been criticized because she didn't really establish any public trust right or human right or federal constitutional right. And she made no requirement of any remedial activity by anybody in Montana. But what she did do is mainly apply this constitution to recent activity of the Montana legislature. There was a concrete dispute, mainly over a Yellowstone County generation plant, a $283 million, 175 megawatt gas-fired power plant under construction south of Billings, Montana. And that was brought to a halt because of environmental concerns. That halt was what led the Montana legislature to pass a law forbidding the gathering of any information about the impact of this big gas power plant on the state of Montana, which conceivably would have released 23 million tons of greenhouse gases every year. And what her decision will have, the most immediate effect it will have, is to stop that process because she found it unconstitutional, a violation of the Montana Constitution, for the legislature to say you cannot consider the long-term impact on climate change of this power plant.
So there was that context and the arrogance and the recklessness of the legislature in promoting fossil fuel interests in the state. But I was also struck by how much the testimony of these youth emphasized their being proud Montanans, proud citizens of Montana, proud of their history and of its protection of the environment. Held the lead in the case, described herself as daughter of a ranching family, and spoke about the impact of the climate crisis on her family's ranch in the southeast corner of the state. She helped raise livestock and build fences, and she talked about how her home as she knew it may not be there in the future, and how scared she is and saddened to see this happening. Another one of the youth talked about how important it is for Montana to take responsibility for our own part in this. Why aren't these grown-ups taking responsibility? Even though they're not responsible for the whole climate crisis, we each have to take responsibility for our own parts. And her testimony was also challenged in terms of the psychological impacts of the climate crisis. But the judge accepted the mental health testimony because it was very much about stress and anxiety and sadness. These are emotions that are part of normal human experience rather than youth developing some kind of trauma disorder, mental disorder. So I think that was a real important and critical part of the trial.
Well, yeah, they did a fabulous job of delineating the facts of the case, but it also focused in on issues of responsibility. Now, the government defends itself the way governments always do and fossil fuel companies always do by saying, hey, we didn't do the cause the whole climate to change. This is not our fault. But the fact is that 24 million tons of greenhouse gas is a substantial chunk, and people have to individually and collectively within their particular businesses or activities or enterprises be responsible for whatever it is they actually do themselves. And that's what she found is required. That's why she found is precisely the impact, for example, of the legislature's suspension of that the knowledge requirement to be unconstitutional. And you're right about the kids. Anybody who's got kids, who knows young people, knows that they live under a gloomy cloud of thinking there's going to be some sort of apocalypse, some sort of fire or flood or hurricane is going to do everyone in. And a general resentment of people who are now running things for not having managed everything better than they have. That's a widespread feeling. And the only other climate change litigation that's ever succeeded was in Australia. It was precisely the same kind of case with young people attesting to the impact on them of massive environmental degradation.
Now, I think the preparation of these cases, including the Giuliana versus Gov case here in Oregon, have brought communities together in a really important way. Like in the Montana case, a 20-year-old Sariel Sandoval, who's a member of the Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribe, grew up in Northwest Montana, testified about how climate change affects the web of plants, animals, and land around her. It's really scary seeing what you care for disappear right in front of your eyes, she says. And then she testified that Native communities have, quote, lived through genocide, assimilation, relocation, termination, and so many other traumas. We can definitely adapt and survive climate change, but that doesn't make it right. So it was a very powerful testimony that drew on the pride of resilient tribal resilience and survival, but also landed on the fact that this is morally wrong, what's happening in this state.
Yeah, it was a very adept combination of physics, chemistry, and morality, and spirituality. A really well done lawsuit. Her findings of fact were extensive. They often are not ever admitted for the general legal reason that we have a hard time showing how relevant it is to the defendant's activities or failures to act. But it made a really great, long, coherent, precise series of fact findings that is compelling. It's like even with magical realism, Gabriel Garcia Marquez said, precision is the key to magical realism. If you say blue butterflies landed on Madame Suarez's arm, that's one thing. But if you say 214 blue butterflies iridescently landed on Madame Suarez's arm, that gives it a much more realistic sound. So just in terms of persuasive narration, the precision of just what the Greeley curve means, and which is all about measuring the increase of the amount of carbon dioxide in the air, is really persuasive. And then when they moved into what the psychological impact on children is, it switched gears and brought up the kind of testimony you're talking about and how this is not just all fun games and digits on a blackboard. This is burning up our planet, and this is burning up this part of this particular jurisdiction in Southeast Montana. So it was altogether an effective presentation.
And it played also on youth playing sports. There was Grace Gibson Snyder, 19-year-old from Missoula, who talked about wildfire smoke has impaired her ability to play soccer outdoors in her hometown. And she says, as we were running, sprinting up and down the field, just fills your lungs, she said. She dreamed of raising a family in her beautiful home state, but is not sure she can stomach the thought of raising children amid worsening climate breakdown. There's this really rich, vivid description of everyday life and the way that the climate crisis has profoundly compromised the ability to function in these everyday ways, which I think isn't a better strategy than how many of the mental health professionals have entered into these cases where they emphasize mental impairments, suicide, increased rates of depression. And I think there's been a very big cost to focusing on mental disorders in these social justice legal settings. And here it was a very different approach. And I think it was more mental health of daily life, and that anyone could identify with this. Can we talk just before we close today a bit about the Giuliana case that's been revived, resurrected to the satisfaction of many, but it's a similar kind of perilous road ahead.
Well, that's right. It's a federal case. It would have more impact, if more far-reaching. It's brought about it in Eugene, and the Ninth Circuit brought it to a halt, but now it's been reactivated by the district court judge, Ann Aiken, in Eugene, and it's going to go ahead now. If it prevails, of course, it'll have to survive the gauntlet of the Ninth Circuit, but it will be much more far-reaching in its impact since it's a federal case.
Aside from it being federal, are there other aspects of the case, like rules around discovery and the process itself, as well as a potential ruling that makes it different?
It is, after all, a federal case. That's a big deal. A federal judge, for example, banned the sale of abortion-inducing medications all over the country by striking down an FDA rule. So, you know, federal court is a bigger playground.
Is the legal process itself much different?
Well, there's a host of procedural differences, but it's essentially the same. They will try to get into evidence the same sort of things that were accepted by the Montana judge. And they will succeed or fail. It depends on what Judge Aiken decides.
Yeah, I think one of the benefits of these highly publicized lawsuits and trials is bringing onto the media stage, if the media covers it, but the dramas allow a larger public discussion of these issues that otherwise are much harder to mobilize traction around.
Right now, in everyone's lives, there is a sense that things are weather-wise, going all to hell, going in unexpected directions, going in irreversibly bad directions. And then there's regular life, your jobs, your kids. But what these lawsuits do is blend the two. They show how that regular life produces these very sorts of effects. I think they have that great virtue of linking up unconscious fears or conscious fears, particularly held by children, and how it is that we live from day to day. How our politicians are influenced, who pays them what. These questions have been separated for too long.
Yeah, we know the human mind is very creative in generating defenses and isolating one part of life from another and managing anxiety. So we will have to continue to make this also on the Old Mole Variety Hour in KBOO a forum for talking about these cases.
Right on.
Thanks, Mike.